listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. It's lovely to have you along. We've got a mum on now, and it's Judy. Good morning, Judy.
Hi, Rodney.
You know, I just forgot your double-barreled surname.
Martin Hendry.
That's it. I forgot the first part. Judy Martin Hendry.
Yeah.
Hendry with a D.
Yes.
You must be a bit anxious, to put it mildly.
Yeah, that's very mildly. I've been anxious for the last, well, since the 16th of July.
You have a young son in jail.
Yes.
And he is protesting.
Yes.
Do we know what he's protesting?
His detainment at the moment. He was arrested for failing to appear at the Whangarei District Court, but he was in contact with Whangarei District Court and they emailed him to tell him he could appear, he could make a special appearance. But that afternoon, the police came and arrested him. And he tried to tell them that he had an appearance that he could go to in Whangarei. He told the court the next day and the next day, and it was, I wasn't here, so, but I take it it was, must have been ignored because they kept him in custody and then eventually moved him to Spring Hill.
So he had a requirement to appear before the court.
Mm.
He, as you understand it, contacted the court. Everything was cool, yeah, as he understood it.
Mm. Can I just add, prior to that, he emailed the court the night before he was to be sentenced. This was last year. Informed them that he wasn't coming. He wasn't aware of the warrant, and what made him even more not aware of the warrant was he was pulled over by the police in March of this year. His details were given. They checked him on their computer, and they gave him a speeding ticket. Well, the speeding ticket was sent here, and so he really didn't think there was a warrant out for his arrest.
No.
No.
But there was a warrant out for his arrest, and there was a warrant out for his arrest for failing to appear at the court.
Mm.
And was that to be sentenced or to be,
yeah,
charged?
To be sentenced, yeah.
So he'd been found guilty of something.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us what that was or not worry?
It was, the charges were assaulting police, willful trespass, escaping police custody, and
something else.
I've got them here somewhere.
And he had been found,
yeah,
he'd been found guilty of these charges.
Yeah. Yes.
Was due to appear for sentencing.
Yes.
Didn't appear.
Yes.
A warrant went out for his arrest. But as he understood it, he had explained the reason he wasn't going to be there and everything, yeah, was cool.
And because he didn't, when he explained the reason, he didn't hear back from them.
Yes.
Which made him think that, okay, well, nothing's happened.
Okay.
And then when he was pulled over by the police in March and they had his details, nothing happened. They didn't inform him there was a warrant or anything. They issued a ticket and, yeah, so.
How old is he?
38, 39. Oh, he was born.
Oh, wow. So he's, yeah, not a young lad.
No.
You must have had him when you were 6.
No, I was 23.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is he a good boy?
He is, yeah.
The only, has he been?
Yeah. The only trouble Brad ever got into when he was younger was at school when he intervened when a bully was, this
so
was
only
immediate.
In a good way. So this charge that he has isn't characteristic.
No. No.
Do you mind? So how come he ended up getting on the wrong side of the law?
Anyone who knows Brad knows his mouth usually
okay.
gets him into trouble. He
sounds like me.
He knew that the law around the mask exemption, you didn't have to produce a mask exemption, and he'd been into this liquor store twice and was served because he told them the legislation, he told them to look it up, and when he went back, it all started with that because he told them he didn't need to produce his mask exemption, he just wanted to be served. They called the police and it all happened from there because the police wanted to see his mask exemption too. They didn't know the law. Brad just wanted to be served. He waited for the police so the police could tell the store owner that he didn't need to produce a mask exemption and he had a right. Brad knows his law stuff and he, you know, spouts the sections off his head. He knows it's all in his head that he had a right to be served. And it all started from there.
I'm pleased you explained that because we're not dealing with a gang member.
No. Yeah. We're dealing with someone who, when he knows something and he knows he's right, he'll keep arguing would be beyond, to say the word, or debating.
Beyond the point where sense might say, I should stop now.
And it got all out of control.
I understand perfectly how that would happen because during those years and those months, I could well have imagined being in exactly your son's circumstance because you're on a hair trigger and so sick of it, sick of the abuse and angry with the police. I'm still angry with them. I actually have to restrain myself from saying rude things to them.
I've got no faith in them anymore.
No. Yep. So Brad's a good boy.
Yep.
Stands up for himself.
And others.
Ends up upsetting police. Ends up being charged and found guilty.
Oh, he was pepper sprayed and tasered first.
Jeepers creepers.
And there was a video, so anyone can search that video.
Then he doesn't turn up to the court, and so they detain him and they arrest him. He doesn't know there's even a warrant out for him. He gets arrested, held at the police station, and then shifted through to Spring Hill, where he's currently in custody.
Yeah.
Has he been sentenced for anything?
No. Oh, in the past?
No.
Oh, no. No, not yet. He did have he had a sentencing date, but he was in hospital and he came back for the AVL and corrections. He sat in front of a blank screen. It wasn't connected.
Okay. I actually think we all have the picture now. So just for listeners, we're talking to Judy Martin Henry. God, I'm going to struggle with that Martin. I've got to do a mnemonic. Martin Henry, about her son Brad Flutie, who's, did you say he's 38?
Yeah.
Currently detained.
No, he's 37, sorry. Oh, I've made him older. Oh,
you made yourself a year older too. currently detained, awaiting sentencing for getting into altercation with a police officer over a mask mandate at a liquor store.
Mm.
So pretty low-level stuff. In my view, not even a crime. But police being police and men being men, dispute and charges, and he finds himself unbelievably in prison in Spring Hill.
Yeah. Can I just add,
Yes.
That, yes, this went through court. Brad did represent himself with the help of a McKenzie friend.
Good
the
on
judge
him.
Made his decision, and I had to accept that.
Yes.
Brad, being Brad, doesn't accept that, but he wishes now he just did, but we can't go back.
Yeah. So he starts a hunger strike and a fluid strike.
Yeah. He started that he wouldn't take it from anyone in authority because of what the police had done, not in Whangarei, but arrested him when he was trying to tell them he had arranged to appear. So that's when he started in his hunger strike and protest.
What day was that?
The 16th of July.
So we're now nearly the 16th of September. We are the 16th of September when this goes to air.
Yeah.
We're past it. 2 months. So and he's still on this hunger and fluid strike.
No, it's not a fluid strike.
Okay.
He would take fluids in Tauranga Police Station after he collapsed on day two and the ambulance were called. The ambulance said he needed to drink and have electrolytes. So they rang and asked us to bring some water and electrolytes in. I still wasn't back from the South Island by then. And they were dropped off. So he was drinking fluids brought in by, he called them trusted sources, so family or friends. He wouldn't accept anything from the police or the justice system, really. And yeah.
There'll be a question lurking. I don't want to cast aspersions on your son or you. Because it's hard to understand why you wouldn't receive fluid from the police.
Because he didn't trust them.
Does he think they might poison him?
No. It was just, he doesn't want to, I don't know what word he would use, contracting to them. So
okay. So it's almost a political position. You've
probably
got me in detention.
Yeah.
I'm not going to submit.
I don't know. Yeah, just.
But what I guess what I'm getting at, he's sane.
He's sorry?
Sane. He's well in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to work my way towards. I didn't want to cast aspersions, but he's not mentally unwell.
No.
But he's got a strong conviction.
He's got very strong principles. He's very determined when he knows he's been done wrong. Yeah. That's why I just want to concentrate on his health.
Yes.
Yeah.
So for 2 months now, he's been only prepared to take fluid and food from trusted sources.
Yeah.
And has he been in that position for 2 months?
Yes.
My goodness.
We took water and juice with electrolytes in them to Tauranga. Then when he was transferred to Rotorua, they confiscated it. And I was able to take more to Rotorua. And then he was transferred to Spring Hill Prison, and that's when the nightmare really began.
It sounds like a nightmare up to that point. When you say where the nightmare really began, I start to get a shiver down my spine.
Mm.
On what date was he shifted to Spring Hill?
I'm not sure. I haven't got the timeline up.
I'll get it.
Yeah.
Because you kindly sent it through to me.
Yeah.
It sounded like a nightmare long before.
Yeah. So it was 5 days after the 16th of So the 21st, he was sent to Spring Hill.
January, February, March, April, May, June, July. 21st of July.
Yeah.
So he's been in Spring Hill for nearly 2 months.
Yeah.
And how come Spring Hill?
That's where they just sent him, I think. Yeah.
No, but how come that's become a nightmare for you and him?
Because when I first rang the day after he got there, I needed to tell them that he won't drink any water from you. Can I bring some water in like I took in for Tarong and Rotorua? And that he'd only consumed approximately about 3 litres total in the 5 days he'd been in custody and police. So he was a big boy. He should be having 3 litres a day. So I was concerned about his health. And
you're a nurse?
Yes. Was a nurse and then a midwife.
Okay.
And he was quite rude to me and hung up on me. So I made the decision to record all my calls.
Good for you.
Yeah. So I kept ringing and I spoke to someone named Carl on about the second day, and he had Brad in the room with me, let me talk to Brad, and Brad said he was getting a bit weak and, dehydrated. And Carl arranged for Brad to have my number on his call list so he could ring me, because there's a process you have to do, because Brad won't sign anything either.
Yeah.
He makes it very difficult for them because he won't sign anything, but he does everything verbally and he'll agree verbally. And I kept trying to, and I spoke to two people out of the health clinic. One of them was a manager, and I asked, can you give him IV fluids? And she said, no, we can't do that here. This is a primary setting. And I said, and this was about day three by this stage, and I knew he was getting even more dehydrated. I eventually spoke to, he was some sort of deputy manager, and he said, we're offering him water, and if he's refusing, I said, he's not refusing water. He's take it from me. Can I please bring in some bottled water? Can't you just give him some bottled water and say it's from me? I was begging him. And he said, no, it's against policies. So then
what a heck
yeah.
Of horrible
yeah.
people.
So that made
because
me
because he could yeah. die.
Yeah. So we're 72 hours now without fluid. And then so he told me, so I started looking up the policies. It's not what the policy said. Yeah. When someone's on a hunger strike, they're supposed to try everything to get them to drink or eat, whānau meetings, and none of that took place. And
but just common humanity.
Yeah. Oh, he just kept saying to me, we're off, and there's water in his cell. And it was just how, yeah. And then it was Thursday. So he was transferred to Spring Hill on the Sunday. It was the Thursday that, and because I'd asked Brad what his ketone levels were. When someone's not drinking, you should be doing ketone levels. He had one ketone level done on the Tuesday when he saw a doctor, because everyone who goes to prison, they have a medical assessment by a doctor. That was done on the Tuesday. And they were doing his blood pressure and heart rate every day. But that's not a problem when you're on a hunger strike. It's your ketone levels and your blood sugar levels. And these were not being done daily. They should be done at least twice or three times a day if you're not drinking anything. And then the Thursday morning, I got a distressed phone call from him begging me to call him an ambulance.
Take your time. We've got no hurry. Everyone listening is supporting you 100%. We're on your side, and we're on the side of your son.
he had been hallucinating since about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, seeing his dead father-in-law. And his heart felt like it was pumping out of his chest. I could hear that his breathing was laboured. He was struggling to breathe. And I said, "Have you called a nurse?" He says, "I've been ringing the emergency bell all night, but they keep telling me to go back to sleep." That's the guy. Yeah. This is in the medical part of the prison. So I rang the ambulance and they were turned away by prison staff.
Dear God, no.
The worst part of this was, because I rang the ambulance back and they told me they'd been turned away, I was ringing the prison all the time to see how my son was. And no one would get back to me. I just kept getting, I've got so many recorded phone calls, emailing the appropriate people, someone will get back to you. And it was just, and then in the end, they were directing my calls to the team leader of the reception part, who kept telling me. By the next day, I started ringing every half an hour. And at about 11:30, because I kept getting the same message from them, I decided to email management and see what is happening, what's going on with my son. And then the next phone call at about lunchtime, I was told that he was taken to hospital the day before. They recalled the ambulance less than 4 hours after they sent away my ambulance. So, happening. Because I'd also looked up the policy, when a prisoner goes to prison, they have to ring family, goes to hospital, they have to ring family unless the prisoner expressly says no. Brad had asked them to call me, and they didn't. So for over 24 hours, I didn't hear anything. I didn't know where he was. I didn't know if he was alive. So the last phone call I had, he sounded awful. I've got that recording too. Yeah. So, yeah. At least then when I rang the hospital and got put through to his nurse and said that he was okay, that's when I felt a little bit better.
Up to this point, do you think the system was incompetent?
Absolutely.
Or vindictive?
Totally negligent.
Totally.
I don't know if it's vindictive. The lawyer said to me, they put people there to demoralise them.
Well, your son wouldn't be their typical prisoner either.
No. I've been told by someone there that they've never had anyone like him there.
No. And so, but you would expect them to have two features about them. One, basic humanity.
Yeah.
And two, follow the policy.
Yeah. There's another thing there. The nurses have also their own code of ethics. Doctors have a code of ethics. Yes. But apparently the medical team there is under corrections. They're not under Ministry of Health. But they still should have their own code of ethics.
So Brad is now in hospital.
Yeah.
In a bad way, because you don't go for...
I just spoke to him this morning. He's a lot better than when I spoke to him yesterday. Yeah. Yeah. but they're still mucking around with him. This is Brad's fourth hospital admission since he's...
Yeah, because you jumped to me. I need to get through. I've got the first hospital admission from Spring Hill.
Yeah.
So he goes to hospital. And what do the hospital do?
They rehydrated him, made sure his electrolytes were balanced, talked to, I think, yeah, that was when they first talked about the refeeding program. And unbeknownst to anybody, they, because this is going to have relevance further on, they diagnosed him with oral thrush, which when you're dehydrated, you're more likely to get oral thrush.
So what was the refeeding program?
So when people have been on a hunger strike or, you know, gone without food for, you know, at least, I think I read, 5 days, you've got to be careful how you start
food,
because there's something called refeeding syndrome, which can have a detrimental effect to your heart and your body. It can cause seizures. Worst case scenario, it can cause death.
So you've got to be very careful and,
yeah,
A, what you feed them, how much you give them,
yeah,
and the time it you give it.
And you've got to check their electrolytes. And,
okay. Yeah. So he's in hospital and he accepts hospital treatment.
Yes.
So they patch him up, basically.
Yeah. He was in for 6 days. Yeah.
And then they send him back to Spring Hill.
Yeah. And the office discharge summary, the doctor put to be given water by a trusted source, i.e. family.
Oh, wow. You can't ignore that.
No.
Because... Oh, wow. Because I'm suspecting they didn't agree.
Well, the next day, I, because I didn't know he'd been transferred back until I rang the hospital and he wasn't there. And then I emailed, I rang to see if I, when I could bring some water in. And then I had to email. It was 24 hours before, because I had to make a mad dash over. It was a 2-hour drive for me to take this water. So by the time I could get the water to him, Brad was another 24 hours without fluid.
It's hard not to swear.
Oh, don't worry. I've done a lot of that. Yeah. So, but at least they agreed to let me bring some water in. So I was grateful for that.
So he's in prison now.
Yeah.
You're able to bring him water.
Yeah.
And he's drinking it. So he's having fluid.
Yeah.
But nothing else.
No.
Then what?
Then his electrolytes were... all out of balance in that. His ketones were still too high. Blood sugars would go low, which happens when you're not eating. And Brad said to them, he'd also told me that the hospital were giving him juice. So that helps with your electrolytes.
Of course.
So he told the prison, can you get... can you get my mum to bring in some juice because that was helping my electrolytes? No, she's already bringing them water. And apparently, from what Brad said, he was called to the medical department and he was told his potassium levels were too high because the doctor at the prison had prescribed potassium, and then it came back that his potassium levels were too high, and that can affect your heart. And they wanted to call an ambulance, but Brad had to sign a form first. And Brad said, well, you know, I'm not going to sign a form. Can I ring my mother? So, and these were from the blood tests the day before. And so Brad rang me and said, "Mum, can you call me another ambulance? They want me to sign a form before they'll call one." So I called another ambulance.
I love your son.
I do too, but what he's put me through in the last 2 months, Rodney? Yeah. If they don't kill him, I will. No, don't put
Yes. When you get, no, I know exactly what you mean because
He knows I'm going to punch him.
my father wanted to prune a tree in his mid-70s up a big ladder, and my mother told him not to. And of course, he fell off it and broke every bone
Oh,
in his
God.
body in his mid-70s and punctured his
Oh.
lung.
Oh, no. You should have listened to his wife.
Yeah, and I'll never forget it. We get into the hospital, and they initially thought that my dad would die. Then they thought he'd be a quadriplegic or something, and then they thought he would come right. And she said, "Well, doctor, fix him up because when I get him home, I'm going to kill him."
Yeah.
And we all know how loved ones do this to us. In a funny way, it's admirable too, because it's that strength of conviction.
Yeah, but it's what it's doing to everyone else. It's not good. But
Does your son see that?
yeah, he does. Yeah. And that's why he's been asking for the last month to do the refeeding program. And
So we've got to back the truck up. We did it. We took a philosophical turn. So you called the ambulance. This is the second
this
time.
is the second time
And the
he.
ambulance turns up and he can hop in it.
Yeah.
They take him back to hospital.
Yeah.
Hello, it's you again. You're still
Yeah.
not eating. No, I'm
Yeah.
still not eating.
He's, and that's when he saw Brad said it, she was a lovely doctor. And she talked about the refeeding program and offered him the feeding program. And he said, "Yeah, I'll take it." But he and then she said his potassium levels had come down because he hadn't had the potassium that day. So they had come down to within normal range. And she said, "Your electrolytes." He said, "Well, I've been telling them I need the juice." And she goes, her words, quotation, "I can't believe they sent you to hospital for juice." And he asked her permission if he could write it in his journal as her quote. And she said, yes. And so she wrote on her discharge summary, "To have juice brought in by family
Right.
and discussed refeeding program."
Now, how long did they refeed him in hospital this time?
No, she offered it to him, but he had to go back for his AVL because it was a sentencing.
Ah, so thinking I've got to get this over with. So he goes back to prison, turns up to the AVL, and it's a blank screen.
Because the prison didn't connect them. The prison told them the day before that he was in hospital, but he left hospital at 5 in the morning. His AVL was about 10:30. I can't remember the exact time, but they didn't connect him. And I see on mainstream media today they've put, Brad's doing this on purpose because to miss his sentencing, but because he was in hospital. It's just, well, we all know mainstream media lie, don't we?
Totally. I resisted the urge to say another bad word. I'm doing well.
Do you want me to say it for you? Because I don't mind.
No, I'm deep in prayer.
Okay.
So now he's back at hospital. The only thing that he's got now extra to his bow is he's got a note that he's to have juice and mum can bring in juice. Did that happen?
I bought him in some that cold press thing. So
Oh, lovely.
and I expressly told them that had to be kept in the fridge until given to him because it,
Yes, goes
because
rancid.
it's that had the most
Nutrients.
nutrients in it for him because there were, you can get some vegetable ones too.
Yes.
So I just got a mixture of them.
And this
But
would be possible.
still at this stage, I didn't know he had thrush.
Okay. And this would be costing you an arm and a leg. Those drinks are dear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they keep it in a fridge?
Yeah, up until 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So now he's having cold compress juice full of nutrients and vitamins and calories for him.
Yeah.
And water.
Yeah.
And you'd be thinking, phew, this is actually not too bad now.
No, he said, and that's when he started asking to go back to do the refeeding program that this doctor offered.
And go back to hospital.
Yeah, to do the refeeding program.
To get him back onto food, solid food.
Yeah.
And they said what?
They kept denying him. Yeah, every day he would ask, sometimes twice a day. Yeah.
So this is now seeking medical treatment.
Yeah.
So he's been denied medical treatment.
Yeah. And then they started saying that it could be done here. And Brad says, no, you can't do it safely here. You can't have IV access, you know.
Then what happened?
And then in a phone call, not, I don't know how long after, but I think I've put it in my timeline. He rang me and he goes, my mouth's all sore and all this white stuff. And I went, oh, you've got thrush. And she goes, and he said, the nurse didn't know what it was this morning. Mind you, I used to deal a lot with babies thrush in their mouth and I could diagnose over the phone. And he said, I'm coughing it out. And I said, oh, but you got a bad case of thrush. And I says, you know, ask for some coconut oil. And he says,
just tell me, and maybe some listeners, other listeners smarter than me will know, what is thrush?
Oh, so just a fungal infection in your mouth and you get this white stuff all over your tongue and your gums.
And it's quite uncomfortable?
Yeah, it can get very uncomfortable. Yeah.
And what do you say, give him some coconut?
Coconut oil is the natural remedy that I've always used, because there's a lot of mums I used to look after that didn't want medication for their babies. So coconut oil, you rub it on the tongue and the cheeks and that. Can you bring me some in? So I asked the contact I had at the prison, was a chief senior advisor to management, if I could bring some coconut oil in to treat Brad's thrush. And because the amount of times he kept emailing back saying, you know, we have an adequate medical team. Yeah. And I explained that Brad has always gone for alternative therapies rather than medication, because their policy states that can't remember the words. Their medical thing should be adequate, the same as what's out in the public. And I emailed him back and said, well, there's a lot of people that do alternative therapies. And, you know, can I please bring in some coconut oil? No, you're already bringing in water. You're already bringing in juice. And I was like, oh, God. So, yeah, that wasn't
the
allowed.
The juice too being sugar.
It was making it worse.
It'd be feeding the fungus.
Yes. Yeah. So he started not drinking as much juice because it was making it worse. So, and then he started vomiting up the thrush. So I'm presuming it went down into his esophagus and, yeah. And that's when he started. And then he got given a warm bottle of juice and said, Mum, I'm not even putting my juice in the fridge now. So, yeah. And that's when he started vomiting all the time. And so I was getting a bit worried that he'd get dehydrated again. And then lost on my timeline now.
He started, you got the thrush.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let you take in the coconut oil.
No.
And he started vomiting.
Yeah. And then he was vomiting up the big, he was explaining it as big white fluffy, so I knew it was thrush. And he started vomiting even more and more, so I was getting concerned that he was going to get dehydrated again. And Tuesday of this week, what day is it today? I don't even know. Yeah, Friday. Yeah, so Tuesday of this week, he'd been vomiting nonstop by 2 days by this stage. He was still in the general public. Because, oh, first of all, can I go back?
Yes, please.
To after the second hospital admission, and he was taken back to the medical part. So when you're on a hunger strike, you should be in the medical part of the prison. He was in a cell. And then after the AVL debacle, he got visited by, he said, a couple of well-dressed suits. One was a woman and one was a man. He later found out that who the woman was, who was the manager of the medical department. They apologised for the error that they caused, so he couldn't do his court appearance, and how he'd been treated medically. And the woman had said to him, because I don't want to give any names, the woman had said to him, if you have any more issues, you can ask to call me or see me. So Brad gave me her name, and then must have been a couple of days later that guards dressed in riot gear came into Brad's cell and said he was being moved. And Brad said, why? He said, well, your hunger strike's finished. And he said, no, it's not. And they told him that he wasn't refusing to eat anymore. He says, yes, I am. I'm still on my hunger strike. Can you show me the documentation for my transfer? And they wouldn't. Went on for about an hour. Brad wanted to see the proof that was signed by this woman, apparently. And when they got a piece of paper, it wasn't, didn't even have her name on it. And he says, well, that's not proof that I've been, you know, ordered to move. So one of the guards just smashed him in the face with his shield, and they handcuffed him and moved him. He was just sitting on his bed.
Oh, dear.
So I'd already made a complaint to the inspectorate over the phone about the health thing earlier on, because I was desperate. I was trying to ring anybody I could or email anyone I could in that first week. And no one was getting back to me anyway. So I made a complaint about the assault, and that was investigated and no wrongdoing. Yeah, because they tried to negotiate with Brad for an hour. Yeah, didn't help, didn't do anything, so they're allowed to use force, apparently. But smashing a shield in someone's face when he's just sitting on his bed, I don't know what sort of force they, yeah. Brad has never been aggressive in there. He's been very difficult because he always just offers a remedy. Brad's very careful with his words. He never refuses anything or declines anything. But all in Brad's medical records he's seen, when they keep writing Brad refuses. Now, that's a legal document. They can't write that because Brad's never refused. He offers something else. And I know from, you know, medical, that you're not allowed to write things that aren't true in someone's medical notes. And they've done that all throughout. Brad did point out to one of them that you can't write that in there because I haven't refused. This is what I've said. And you should be writing that, because that's a legal document and you've lied on it. Tied him up and not so. He was like, oh, yeah. So, yeah. Brad's very careful with his words. That's so annoying. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yep, so they moved him to the general population. That was after the second hospital visit. So he's been vomiting constantly for more than 2 days in general population. And so this was Tuesday, and he was either Tuesday or Wednesday, I can't remember. And then, no, it would have been Tuesday. It's on the timeline. And he was vomiting while he was talking to me on the phone. And he said there was black flecks in it. And I didn't say anything to Brad because I didn't want him panicking, because a medical term is coffee grounds. I said, "How many times is it in your vomit?" He said, "Oh, not all the time. Sometimes it's black, sometimes it's brown." And I says, I just don't, could be blood, just keep an eye on it. I want you to show the nurses when you don't flush the toilet or try not to vomit in the toilet, vomit on a towel so they can see." And then he had to go. And then, about 10, 15 minutes later, a different prisoner rang me. Must have used Brad's, I don't know how he got it. He rang and said, "Brad's told me to ring and tell you he's vomiting up blood." And so I thought, "Oh my God, yeah." And I thought, "Oh God, okay. But can we stop a minute?"
Sure, we can have a spell because we're on a. I
Because
should
we,
tell listeners that we're on a pre-record. We're just giving you time.
yeah, because I have.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. We're talking to Judy Martin Hendry. I got it right.
You did.
And she's the long-suffering mum of Brad Flutie, who's known in the media as that anti-vaxxer. Who got into strife over mask mandates at a bottle store, and the police were called, and an altercation occurred. And he's now in prison and been on a hunger strike for near on 60 odd days. And where were we up to, Mum?
I had to go back to last weekend because
Please.
I, yeah, he'd,
You've done a great job, by the way, at keeping this all in your head. And I must say, you're doing an incredible job given the emotions of a mum and her boy.
yeah, I feel a bit better this morning because I've talked to him this morning. He's doing a lot better
Lovely.
than yesterday.
Lovely. Take us back to
So
the weekend.
yeah, so last Saturday morning I spoke to him and he was vomiting. Not continuously, but he was vomiting quite a bit. And he said the he was worried because the nurse had done his ketones the day before and they were high and his blood sugar was low. And I said that's normal, Brad, because you're not drinking the juice anymore. And because it was just making his thrush worse. And so, and he said the blood pressure and that was all right. And then the Saturday, he said, I said, "Well, how what's your ketones today?" And he said the nurse didn't do them. She just did his blood pressure and that. So I emailed the contact, the senior advisor to management, and said that I was concerned because of Brad's vomiting and his worsening thrush and the fact that he couldn't drink his juice and that, when are you going to get him medically assessed? I can't remember what I said. And then at 11 o'clock that night, guards woke him up, came to his door, handcuffed him, double handcuffed him, put him in a prison van in a steel box, put the cold fan on him all the way to Waikato Hospital. And Brad said he was glad he was wearing three layers of clothes because it was freezing. Yeah. So that's pretty humane, isn't it? Inhumane. And when he got, they rehydrated him and he saw a doctor there who told him he could just eat anything he wants. And Brad said, well, that's not what the last two doctors have said in the research that my mum's done. And they rehydrated him, gave him some, oh yeah, first of all, we asked for a second opinion and wanted to see a dietitian. And that was declined. And they rehydrated him, gave him some IV antiemetics and some, which is an anti-nausea medication, and some to take back to the prison. So he rang me when he got back to the prison. So I didn't even know he was in hospital. So this is the third time the prison has not told me he's gone to hospital. And when he got back, within 2 hours, the IV antiemetics had worn off. So he's vomiting again, about every 10 to 20 minutes. And
he'd be so weak to be vomiting.
Yeah.
You got to say he's tough.
He wants to eat. I'd like to say something really funny here.
Please.
They have TVs in their cells in the general population, and his favourite program was Jamie Oliver.
That is funny.
Not only the prison was torturing him, he was torturing himself. He couldn't wait to get home to start cooking these recipes he'd seen. Anyway, so yeah, the vomiting continued, and then so what day was I up to? Tuesday was just vomiting all the time, and I says, I'll ring an ambulance. So I rang an ambulance three times that day, and three times they were turned away. Yeah, because I was more concerned because of the blood in his vomit, known as coffee grounds. Wasn't straight blood.
It's a big call for a prison authority to turn away an ambulance.
Yeah.
And it's a big call, is it not, for the ambulance not to insist that they're going in. Because you can't deny someone medical care.
The third time St. John's ambulance guy rang me and he said, we're not going. He was quite firm with me. He said, I've spoken to the medical part of the prison. They've told me his OBS, which is fine. So blood pressure and that, don't say anything about this. It's like, I said, what about the blood in his vomit? And he says, I've been reassured that the medical team are handling it and we won't be going. So that was the day I really hit the wall. I don't know what else to do. So I contacted someone on Brad's computer to see if he could help. And he involved Sue Gray, and he spoke to the general manager of the prison, who told him Brad had been eating, and that is the biggest, fattest lie that they could have, yeah. So they've been saying Brad's eating, and he
hasn't. They're lying.
Yeah, because he, and I thought, oh, my God, how can he be 104 kilos last week and be 99 kilos today? If he's eating. Yeah. So, and then, because they said they got a permission to go and see him, which is contract, Brad's met him. Brad sees him more than the other doctor. And obviously thought he was okay. And then, after Sue and this person that got involved for me got involved, Brad was moved to what's called isolation, And it's where mentally ill people are kept. It's still in the medical part. And he was supposed to be monitored more closely. And I was telling Brad just to sip water. And, you know, because at least some of it's staying down. And he was feeling really weak by this. I could hear it. He was feeling really weak by this point. So we're day four again since he was discharged from the hospital on the Sunday. So he's really dehydrated again. And I asked him if he was hallucinating, and he said no. So he was put in this cell, and he was ringing the emergency bell in the middle of the night for 2 hours to get his water. But the guard was asleep. The other prisoners were trying to wake the guard as well. Yeah. And this is their, what's the words the senior advisor used? They have a very adequate medical team there. My opinion would be a very negligent medical team.
It must be wonderful having Sue Gray to help.
Yeah. I just, but now that the mainstream media is there, I didn't want it out there because they don't paint Brad in a very good light. And what I've seen this morning, they've already lied. Yeah.
Well, they'll just do what the authorities want.
Can I add something else? It's about another prisoner. I'm not going to say his name, and he's already given permission for Brad, or for me to do a HDC complaint for him.
Yes.
Brad was in the medical part with him. He's got a dislocated finger. Brad said his finger's pointing outside.
Jeepers.
And he said to the doctor, "Doctor, are you going to do anything about this? You said I could go and have an x-ray and get my finger fixed." And Brad said the doctor turned around, looked at him in disgust, and walked away. That was his medical treatment.
Jeepers.
Yeah. I know there's some really bad people in prison, but no one deserves to be treated like this by professionals that have got code of ethics. They're supposed to be caring professionals. I don't understand it.
No.
I don't know what else goes on in that place, the medical place. Yeah. I can only say
we've got a total standoff. No way forward at the moment.
No. Brad's willing to eat and drink again, normally, but he wants it done safely in hospital.
Have you got a way forward?
Well, Brad was taken again to hospital last night, so the prison arranged this ambulance this time. yesterday afternoon. And again, they didn't let me know, but I've got into the habit of when I don't hear from Brad when I should, I just ring Waikato Hospital to see if he's in ED, and they tell me. And so he was. First of all, a person that was going to ring the ambulance yesterday did, but he was told an ambulance was already in attendance, so I knew that Brad was going to hospital. They let that ambulance in because Spring Hill called it. So I rang the hospital when he got there just to let them know, to tell Brad that Mum knows he's there, because the prison don't ring me. And then I waited about 3 hours and I rang the prison to see how my son was. We can't give out that information. And I says, no, but I'm telling you that your policy says that you're supposed to ring family unless the prisoner expressly says not to. I know my son's in hospital and you failed for the third time to tell me where he is. I just wanted to get this on record. So, yeah. And then about half an hour later, this lovely officer rang me and she said, Brad asked me to call you. Yeah. And then I got an email a couple of hours after that from the advisor telling me Brad was in hospital. And it's like, you know, I already knew. It's, but not from you guys. Yeah. I didn't say that, but it's just.
So what we'd like to happen is for Brad to be allowed to go to hospital to have a proper refeeding program.
Yeah. Yes.
Would you mind if I emailed the Minister of Corrections, Mark Mitchell? And it might mean something coming from me as a former minister, and ask him to look into this case and get him to hospital.
I emailed him yesterday.
I will follow up for you.
Okay.
I have got no words for a mother who's going through this. But I'll pray for you and your son.
Thank you.
I'll write to Mark Mitchell and we'll keep in touch.
Okay.
I feel very blessed that you've chosen to come with us and explain this, and you've done so well.
Mm.
And I'm sure I speak behalf on all the listeners that we're very moved.
Mm. Can I just add that I just want, you know, especially the people in the freedom movement, to have respect, of other platforms.
Sure.
And I heard one last night telling people to go to the hospital where Brad is. That's not helpful. Hospital is full of sick people. They're so, you know, understaffed, and the staff that are there are very busy. They don't need to deal with this.
No.
I just want to concentrate on getting Brad well.
Mm.
I know there were the intentions were good, but it's not helpful telling people to go to a hospital. I can't even go and see him unless I got, if he's staying, I can get special permission. But it's not helpful to work at a hospital to have to deal with a whole lot of people, yes, with good intentions, and I'm grateful that people are worried about Brad and praying for Brad, but it's not helpful.
No.
It's not helpful bringing down other platforms for other reasons. I don't want to get involved in that.
I'm sorry, just I've been away. I don't know.
Just respect. Yeah, just respect each other's views, each other's way of going about things, but not helpful what I saw last night.
I'm very sorry. I don't know what that was.
Yeah. We just want to concentrate on getting Brad well so he can go and face his sentencing and accept what the judge gives him.
Yes. Thank you so much. We've been talking to Judy Martins Hendrys.
Martin Hendry. Yeah.
But double banger names throw me, right?
I know.
I've got a small brain, two words, three words, it's just that extra word. Whose lovely son is Brad Flutie, suffering now in prison. Whatever the wrongs the authorities may think that he's committed, he's prepared to deal with the consequences. But we've got to remember it was over wearing a mask in a bottle store and the police being called. Something quite trivial. blew up into this through his mother's testimony. We have learned how shocking the authorities on our behalf have been discharging their duty of care to this prisoner. And we're not happy or satisfied, nor should we be. We're going to all of us get behind Brad with our prayers. I'm going to drop a note to Mark Mitchell. I don't know. May do something. So one thing I can think of doing. And we'll talk soon, Judy. Hopefully with good news.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you for sharing with us and keeping it together, because it can't be easy.
No.
May I say this? You're a wonderful mum.
Thank you.
He's a lucky boy.
I'm still going to punch him when he gets home.
Oh, yes. I'll punch him too if you want.
Okay.
But that's a mother's prerogative.
Yeah.
And he's a very lucky boy to have you as his mum.
I'll tell him you said that.
Yes, do. Please do. Yeah. You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. What a world we live in that's still going on from those stupid mask mandates and COVIDs and all the rest of us. This sort of nonsense is going on. A man who won't wear a mask, banged up in jail, could actually die, seriously compromises health. No one cares, an authority that can do something about it. No common sense, no humanity. You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Send us a text at 2057, email me inbox at realitycheck.radio. Thank you so much for being here this morning and listening.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.